Hello, and welcome to the Cancer Horizons podcast. In each episode, you'll hear from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best: provide cancer updates, research, and education. For opera singer Kathleen Watt, a life-changing cancer journey began with a routine trip to her family dentist. In January of 1997, the examination of a bump in the gum line at the back of her upper jaw eventually led to Kathleen receiving a diagnosis of osteosarcoma, a rare bone cancer, which would be followed by a decade-long process of facial reconstruction. Kathleen shares her story in the new memoir, Rearranged, an opera singer's facial cancer and life transposed, set to be released on October 10th by Heliotrope Books. Kathleen, who will discuss the book during a cross-country tour starting on October 10th in New York City, speaks with CURE on this episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast about the importance of remaining present during treatment and how the notes she took during her cancer journey resulted in a book decades later.
Very often, oral cancers are, in my case, it was a bone cancer, and particularly rare, but many of the head and neck cancers that people suffer are more common or less rare, and often discovered or discoverable through informed dental hygienic examination. This is very important because often it goes overlooked. And mine, head and neck cancers are usually discovered by a dentist. And I just want to highlight that point, because I think it's an awareness that is just coming to dentistry and to include dental hygienists. In fact, the Oral Cancer Foundation was founded 25 years ago by some by a pharmaceutical salesman who had suffered from an oral cancer that was discovered by a dentist, and so he made his life work to alert everybody in dentistry, from the DDMs to the hygienists, what to look for. And to be alert for it, because it is usually the point of first introduction to oral cancers, which can be devastatingly life-threatening. After I got my definitive diagnosis, I had no idea what my role was. He said, and I said, "Well, so what now?" I said that to the doctor on the phone. And I think he was a little bit nonplussed, because he suddenly got emotional. He said, "Why? You have to get to a head and neck surgeon right away." And I was, "Oh, okay, all right, I will. Thank you very much, doctor." And I hung up, and I looked at my partner, and we said to each other, "What the heck is a head and neck surgeon? Is that even a thing?" It sounded like, you know, it sounded absurd to me. A head and neck surgeon. Isn't there a Latin term for that I should know? But, you know, it sounded like the Wizard of Oz to me. So we looked around, we asked a few questions, and we got a referral to a friend of a friend. And this doctor was an entry point person who was able to order for me immediately the CAT scans and the PET scans and the rest of the things necessary for further diagnosis of the exact position and size and so forth. And so the very next day we did that. We went around and got the CAT scans. And later that afternoon, we met the doctor who had referred us for the scans. And he described what was in store for us, for me. My partner went with me, Evie, her name, I've named her Evie in the book. And he told us, what was in store, who he would recommend, who he would recommend that we avoid. He knowing the spectrum that this disease encompasses, and we knowing nothing. We said, stay away from this one because he's radical. This is another one that I would recommend, and this is another one that I trust. And so we took his advice, and we went through the steps one step at a time. Each one was revelatory, was new information, was interesting to me. It kept my attention. I would say that it was more interesting to me than frightening. Partly because we didn't have any time to waste, and I didn't have a lot of time to reflect. But others were reflecting for me, and after the fact, I heard that I learned from the people involved that this doctor, while telling me that, yes, if all goes well, you probably can make the fall auditions, which was not untrue, was saying to someone else, you should prepare yourself for a funeral because it was such an aggressive cancer and the odds were not good. But I will always believe that being sheltered somewhat from that full knowledge or from the fears of others made it possible for me to persevere and stay present. I can't say that, optimism cured my cancer. I'm not, into the power of positive thinking per se, but it allowed me to stay present, stay attentive, stay trustful, and be a participant. A full participant, which is, I think, I think it releases all the good hormones, the brain things that help you access your own resources. I'm not a scientist, and I'm not a new age positivity kind of person. I'm very skeptical about most things, but it certainly made a difference for me to be a participant in my own care.
And I think that is very important, is having a sense of agency, a sense of involvement, not a sense of passivity. Not that, you don't want to feel like this is something that it's happening to you, that it's something that is being done to you. I can totally understand how that in and of itself is empowering. And then kind of on that same note, fast forwarding, the act of committing your story to a book. What sort of sense did that give you? Was that cathartic? Did that give you a sense of empowerment and agency once again in the act, in the very act of taking ownership of your story and telling it for
Well, I would
the
say in retrospect, yes, more so than in the doing of it. What I had done over the years of my, I was going to say incarceration, that's not quite right, but I was very tethered to the hospital for a long time, especially during the critical part where the cancer was being addressed and the beginnings of my reconstruction, and then the consequences after the inconclusive results of my original reconstruction. There was a long period where the rest of the decade was spent, making it right. But during the critical period, like the first 2 or 3 years, I kept notes because it was also interesting. And I'm not saying there was no pain. I'm not saying there was no depression. I'm a depressive personality, actually. And it certainly fed into that. And there's a lot of boredom along the way, but so much of it was so interesting. And I think that was part of being present too. What are they going to do next? What is this procedure about? what is this doctor's personality versus that doctor's personality? How do I put this on my scratch pad when I can't talk and make them understand me? And this is to say nothing of the very entertaining world that I lived in during my ICU psychosis. And so I kept notes, and my caregivers, my sisters and my partner, Evie, kept very careful notes. They kept a bedside journal and notated little things, small things that would happen, not just my doctor's names and not just the procedures they were doing, or not just the the metrics of the medications I was receiving, but also little things that would happen, commentaries on interactions between doctors and so forth. And one of my sisters actually put aside all of the notes that I made on the scratch pad when I was had a tracheostomy and couldn't speak for most of a month, because I think the only way I could communicate was on a scratch pad. And so I had, in situ field notes from the whole situation, and I put them away. I had a shoebox full of stuff like that, photographs, and I kept my calendars too, to kind of have a pathway through those days if I ever wanted to return to it. And I had all these, these random notes, just interesting things that I'd written down or conversations that I'd had throughout the day with people, and that I came into contact with. They were speaking and I couldn't. So it was a very interesting kind of it was almost like a architectural dig, where you work backwards from what you found. I could see my side of the conversation and have to intuit what was on the other side. But then I put it away because I got on with other things. I had to get a 10 years later, my marriage was in crisis. I was cancer-free. I had had my penultimate surgery, and I had to get a job. And then my home life dissolved, and I had to find a place to live. And I went on with all of that. And in that transition period, I met someone and repartnered and became a step parent for the next decade. So when those kids graduated from high school, went off to college, I thought, well, I'll go back to what I was doing. And only to find that most of the people that I'd known professionally were now retired. I mean, it was a whole career's worth that I had sat out. But I had these notes, and I thought, well, now's the time to thread them together. And so I would say first that it was not like journalizing as therapy. It wasn't a therapeutic exercise where I would unload my, I know that my impulse in keeping these notes and these scraps was not to forget, was to put down how it was so that I could review it, return to it at whatever point in the future when I had time to. But just to put it down as it was happening. And I know that that can be therapeutic, but when I wrote them down, I was too busy to do that purposefully or to even to gauge it. I just got it down. It's like taking a picture so that we can look at it later. So almost 20 years later, I took them up again, and it was difficult. It was more difficult than I thought it was going to be, because I cried some tears. I felt all the emotion that I didn't have time to feel at the time, and didn't have time to address in the decades after because I was busy doing other things. But I will say that the time elapsed gave me a chance to look at it more objectively. I could look at it without consequences. I could feel my feelings and express my feelings. and have them without consequences. If I cried, I cried alone because I was going through it in my mind and I didn't have to allow any brain cells for, you know, somebody else's worry for me.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Cure Today and on X at Cure_Today.